Yo, everybody, welcome to Hacks and Jacks, a podcast all about hitters. Usually it's myself and my good friend Joe Galina, but I had the opportunity to interview our stats guru here at PitcherList, Kyle Bland, to talk about a new stat he's come up with using our great PLV data that's pitch level stuff that really factors in the types of pitches guys are seeing that they're swinging at and turn it, you know, take this contact and power and decision value and bring it all into a single stat. It's a really cool way to analyze hitters. This is a pre-recorded interview I had with Kyle, so kind of bear with me. I'm not a great audio editor. There's a couple pops here and there. There's a little bit of noise because that's not necessarily my strong suit, but I hope you'll bear with us and kind of listen to us talk about Process Plus. It's an amazing stat. I think you'll find that it's very useful. If you're one of our PL pros, you can look up right now. And even if you're not, just the discussion about how players can be good at hitting, how players can be relevant to us in fantasy, and the different ways just with the bat, I think is a really interesting conversation. And we'll even talk about specific players like Matt Wallner, Xander Bogaerts, Jonathan India, and how these guys can come to, sort of a similar Process Plus, which is decision value and power and contact blended into one, in different ways. And even our thoughts about, hey, is this a sustainable way for a hitter to be good? Right? What does it mean if I see a player who's all power or all decision value? What does that mean? We really talk about that in the light of Process Plus and what it's giving us. So again, that I think is a really interesting conversation to have. I hope you'll listen in. I hope you enjoy it. And we'll be back next week with our normal brand of Hacks and Jacks with me and Joe. But I hope that you'll accept this, not perfect audio clip, but a very fun interview with Kyle Bland. So thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy it. We've talked a lot on the show about a lot of the cool stats we have here at PitcherList, and we're not the only ones trying to do some of these things, right? Like, there's been a lot of discussion this season, I think, about players' decision-making and their ability to, like, swing at the right pitches, not swing at, the wrong pitches, those kinds of things. And we have these great metrics like decision value, which is all about, that sort of that swing take, right? Like, are you doing that in the right spaces? Are you swinging when you should? Are you not swinging when you shouldn't? We've got contact ability, which is all about, when you're swinging at stuff, are you making contact, especially if you're supposed to, or if you're not, right? Like, what value are you bringing with your ability to put the bat on the ball? Right. And then we've got that power metric, which is, not just like singles, doubles, totals, total bases, anything like that. It's, how much power are you adding over what we expected? Right. Like, yeah, you got grooved a fastball like on the inner third, center cut, and you just, you hit it really hard, but we expect you to do that. So what did you add, sort of to the pitches you got in terms of power? And now, we've talked a lot about how different players have, not everyone has to be perfect at everything. And I'm really excited to talk about this new stat you've come up with called Process Plus, which I think does a really good job trying to sort of get to that point, whereas there's a lot of ways to be good, right? So Kyle, tell us a little bit about Process Plus and what it's trying to do.
Yeah. So part of my responsibilities as director of research and analytics for PitcherList is not only coming up with new stats like this one is, but constantly going backwards and looking at what are the stats we have, how do we like them, how can we improve them. And so Process Plus actually came from me looking back on those kind of, I consider them like our big three hitter stats that we've had for this past season and a little bit in the last season of your decision value, contact ability, and power. I was really happy with those, taking kind of these process oriented stats and getting values from them that control for the quality of the pitch's face. So these use our PLV pitch model and then account for the expected outcomes of the pitch and how the hitter takes advantage of those outcomes. Where Process Plus comes along is I really enjoyed a lot of the results. I mean, when Juan Soto's leading decision value, when Aaron Judge is leading power, when Luis Arias is leading contact, like that all makes me feel really good. But one of the concerns I had was we were looking at, they were all kind of on different scales. So decision value was on a run scale, power was on expected extra base hits, and contact ability was on how, like, the percent that you're expected to make contact above the pitch you saw. And so they were pretty explanatory, but I just didn't like that they didn't play well together. And so one of the things that I've been really working on this last year is converting all of those to the same scale. So in this instance, everything's on a run scale. How many runs have you added to the pitches you saw, to the swings you took, to the batted balls you hit, or how many runs did you detract from that? And what I mean by added and detract from is from the pitch's expectation. So every pitch that we get in, we run through our POV model, and it spits out all of the outcome likelihoods. So your swinging strike, your ball, your doubles, your outs in play, and we have likelihoods and probabilities for all of those for every pitch. And so then we see how the batter influences them. And now one of the things we're doing is we're applying a run value. So we think, okay, you took this ball that's likely to be, you took this pitch that's likely to be a ball that has a run value of this based on what count you're in, based on how likely of a ball it is. And so that's our decision value. Or you swung at this pitch and you made contact. Well, you're adding this many runs just based on what we think making contact is worth there. Or, okay, you made contact, now this batted ball. So it's like a ex-woba model of you hit it this hard and at this launch angle, that has this value, and that's more than what we expected from this pitch. So now all of them play well on a run scale. And the other benefit of that, which is now what Process Plus is you can put them all together. That you can do something like, yeah, he made a good decision, and so it's a very hittable pitch. And so it actually, he didn't need to do a lot to add contact. Like, he didn't add contact value there because he was supposed to hit it because it was a, you know, it was a grooved fastball right down the middle. And yeah, he hit it for a double. That's also expected. So now you can kind of see, okay, what are these outcomes and where do they get their value from? Like, how, what levers are they pressing or how are they influencing the value of the things that are under their control, whether they swing, whether they make contact, and how hard and how high they hit the ball when they do make contact. So this is our nice, like, holistic all-in-one hitter process value stat.
Yeah. And I've got a lot of things to say about Process Plus, which we'll get to as we go, but I did want to just sort of call out for a second, and I think you did a good job at the end there, just talking about how is Process Plus different from something like our hitter performance or like ex-woba, right? Like, what is Process Plus trying to tell you that, or, you know, what is hitter performance based on versus Process Plus? Like, what are those stats trying to tell you versus what Process Plus is trying to tell you?
Yeah, so I'll start with like woba or ex-woba. So those are super helpful, but they also rely on, at least ex-woba relies on strikeouts and walks. So those are plate appearance level stats. They are generally pretty sticky and predictive of future, but you're ignoring all of the pitches before the last one, basically. Like, if, you know, maybe the ump calls a pitch in the zone, maybe he calls it a ball. Now that's considered a walk, even though it probably should have been a strikeout. So, like, it, what our stats do is, since we're assigning probabilities to them, we actually can give you credit for outcomes that didn't actually happen. So if that pitch is generally a ball, but it gets called a strike, well, we're actually going to credit you, decision value, Process Plus, credit you for taking that pitch, because usually that's a really good pitch to take. So that's kind of the first level of it. And then the second part is, at a higher level, I'm adjusting for the quality of pitches you're facing. So if you're seeing a Jake DeGrom slider that's down, dotting the corner away from you, and you're able to get your bat on it and get it, I don't know, maybe into left field for a double, that's a very impressive piece of hitting, even though it looks the same on the scoreboard as, I don't know, like, you just get a meatball, you kind of mishit it, and it flares right through the second or the shortstop and third baseman. That those might show up the same way in your ex-woba, as far as this is the expected bases based on their launch angle and exit velocity. But for our purposes, we are considering how hard was the pitch that you did this against. So you get more credit if you're doing these things against harder pitches than if you're doing these things against weaker pitches. And I think that's a really big differentiator, and I think is something to really help keep in mind, especially kind of early season when hitters may not be facing equal buckets of pitch quality, that it's a really way to be like, actually, he's been facing kind of a murderer's row. I think O'Neill Cruz was like this, that he had a really high pitch quality faced. And so his stats, his PLV level metrics looked really good, even though the results weren't quite backing that up. And now you can see the results are kind of catching up to where he was at the start of the year. And now I'll cover our hitter performance. And that's basically at the pitch level, what was the outcome? Like what happened? That pitch in the zone that's called a ball. Well, it's a ball. We call it a ball. That's what happened. That's your performance on that pitch. It's strictly just looking at outcomes. It's a little more stable than something like a WRC plus because it's per pitch level. So the sample is, anywhere from like 3 to 6 times larger just for a given plate appearance, much less like once you get over a game level, month, season level, it's a lot more opportunities for us to get kind of a talent indicator of what that hitter is. And so that's just based on what happened. So that's also Isak Paredes, everyone's favorite results over process guy, that like he gets a ton of hitter performance credit for pulling those homers right down the foul pole. And like he should, but that's a very hard thing to do process wise. And so he doesn't get as much credit because he's actually not hitting the ball that hard, even if it is at a good launch angle. Like we're not taking into account spray. So that's something where there's a difference between there are guys who have performances that are maybe consistent and maybe predictive, someone like a Paredes, but that's not going to show up in stats like this. But for the most part, for the vast majority of people who don't have that bat to ball and who aren't trying to pull every fly ball they can, process plus is going to be kind of a lot more hitters have control over it. And I kind of touched on that before. These are the things that they have influence over. Do they swing or not? Do they make contact or not? And do they hit the ball hard or not? And then everything else after that, what's the park like? Did they pull it? Where were the defenders located? That's more outside of their control, maybe not so much with the spray kind of dimension, but generally like the defense they're facing, the parks they're facing, the altitude for some parks like Coors, those things are outside of their control. So we're just looking at what they can control.
I really like that. And I think something to just call out, like, I will often say like, hey, this is really cool because it's a pitch level stat. And Kyle, I think you did a good job talking about like pitch level and just, when you're looking at plate appearance level stats, even like strikeout rate, which I love, right? The thing is, you made a great point. It's only but at the end, it actually only talks about one pitch, right? Like the stat you get is based on that last one. It only matters how the plate appearance ended, which is one data point. But when a dude has, even just a regular old six pitch at bat, like we are breaking that down to 6 data points, right? 6 things happened, right? We're not just looking at the last one, even though, again, I understand that that's often the most important one. But when you're really trying to look at stats that weed out some of the luck, you really want to be as precise as you can. And I would say, Kyle, correct me if I'm wrong, it'd be pretty hard to have a process plus that's very high based on luck. Now, you might be able to do it because you're hot, but I don't think you could do it if you're lucky.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think from what I've seen, the power metric is the most variable because batted balls happen so infrequently. And so you can kind of go on a run of you just really get a lot of pitches that you like to hit. And you can just kind of luck into hitting them, that you end up in a spot where you could really do some damage with them. Maybe it's the pitchers you're facing. Hitters are fluky. Like for as many pitches as they see, they have their ups and downs. That's why we love to look at rolling charts. That helps to smooth out kind of those ebbs and flows. But once you start getting to like that 100 to 200 plate appearance level, that's usually around 400 to 800 pitches faced, that it really starts to smooth out and you get an idea of what their talent is like. You get to see like, okay, yeah, he mashed yesterday or he hit 3 home runs or something, but over the span of the last week, that actually doesn't really move the needle that much. Or it's maybe something like, he kind of had a cold streak right before that. And so now that it's somewhere in the middle, that's a much better indicator of what his talent is.
And I think we see that naturally, right? Like who are the streakiest hitters? The guys that just have tons of power and maybe don't make consistent contact, right? Like, to talk about process plus, I really want to talk about some players that that get to a good process plus maybe in different ways. And a guy we started talking about before the show, a guy I loved in the off season, but who is very streaky and will probably continue to be very streaky since the All-Star break, Matt Wallner has the sixth highest process plus. It's up at 134. And the way he gets there is he makes good decisions. Matt Wallner has always made good decisions. He's patient. And when he hits the ball, he hits it really far, right? Matt Wallner has a ton of power in that bat. He doesn't get cheated that often. If he gets, you know, if he gets the barrel on the bat on it, that thing is going away. But also, he is awful at contact, right? Matt Wallner, consistently one of the worst contact guys that we see in our PLV metrics. So Kyle, when you look at a chart like Matt Wallner's, that's really just driven on good decisions and power, what is that, you know, what does that mean to you? What kind of inferences can you make from that?
Yeah. I mean, that to me always, it's the three true outcomes archetype of, this is a guy who will take his walks when they're given to him and he's swinging for the fences every time. But because the contact issues are so poor, he's going to strike out a lot. He's not going to make a lot of contact, but when he does really get into one, he's going to hit it hard. And so it's like your Joey Gallo's, your Kyle Schwarber's, like that's kind of the archetype. These guys who they set a surprisingly solid floor with their decision value, that they know what the strike zone is. They know what kind of pitches are hittable or not. Whether they can hit them is a much more open question, but they more than make up for it with their power. And that's a profile that we're seeing a lot more of, because I think baseball in general is starting to understand that guys who hit ball hard is the driving skill, that it is the thing that's what scores you the most runs. It's the thing that is maybe hardest to find, that it is rare to get guys who can truly hit hard. And that's because it's a hard skill to acquire. But if you can get there, it's almost like they'll look past minus contact, you know, with those hitters I was just talking about. But even like if your decisions are mediocre, like as long as you can get extra bases fairly often, you're a useful bat. And that's kind of what Matt Wallner is. And that's that, you know, we've seen the rise, you know, people lament it, but strikeouts, walks, homers, fitball is basically what's happening. But guys like Matt Wallner, they make it work. We've seen it. We've seen that profile happen before. Schwarber, you know, has been kind of the pinnacle of what this profile can be. And so that's kind of, you know, to a lesser extent, what you'd be looking for with Matt Wallner.
That's a really good point to make, Kyle, about power. It's one of the things that's hard to teach a guy, right? Like it's hard to teach a guy to be stronger. It's hard to teach a guy to just start hitting home runs when he's never done it before, right? Like you can teach a guy to make good decisions. You can help them, you know, sort of tweak some things to try to make some more contact or put balls in play. But at some point, like either you hit the ball hard or you don't, right? Like you can't wake up and become Giancarlo Stanton and swing the bat a million miles an hour, right? Like you can't just do that. It's one of those talents you just have to have. So it makes a lot of sense that a guy like Matt Wallner would be like that. Again, it's a profile. A lot of times we will see this relationship where, if a guy has poor contact, don't be shocked if he hits the ball really hard, right? So like that's how you get in the majors.
So I have like a swing speed app that I made with Savant's new swing speed data. And I just went through and I sorted by who are the fastest swingers in baseball, minimum 100 swings. And Wallner just clips that threshold at 106. But the list is Giancarlo Stanton, O'Neill Cruz, Matt Wallner, Kyle Schwarber, Aaron Judge, Acuna, Joe Adell. And like outside of Acuna, I would say all of those guys have massive contact concerns. And outside of maybe Adell, all of those guys have generally plus decisions. O'Neill Cruz is a lot more questionable, but I think he's been trending more positive in the decision value direction. But like almost universally, those are all huge, like medium to huge question marks contact wise. But the reason they're in the majors and the reason they're performing is because they have that elite bat speed, which like you said, you can't really teach. You can optimize, but you can't just make it spring forth from nothing.
Yeah. And I like that you talked about Paredes. We talk a lot about Isak Paredes on this show, and like, he finds a way to get to fit, you know, I'd almost call it fantasy baseball power, like home runs, because he figured out that a 340-foot fly ball straight down the foul line is almost always a home run. When you hit it to center, it's always an out, right? So he's really taken this skill, and I'm glad you pointed him out, because he's one of these players that just breaks sort of the paradigms that we have. Like he doesn't make as much sense. Luis Arraez, another guy who like he can do sort of whatever he wants because he's going to put his bat on the ball. And like he doesn't swing the bat that fast, almost because I think he truly decides to swing pretty late in the game. He's like, yeah, okay, I can hit that. And then decide. He almost like waits a second. He's like, oh, okay, I can hit it. He does it. So yeah, power. Yeah, that's a big one. O'Neill Cruz. I mean, there's a reason he can hit 120 mile an hour line drive, right? And when you can do that, like sometimes you have to swing and miss too, because you know, you can't sort of make a half, you can't half swing a ball. Like you can't half swing a bat when you're about to hit it 120 miles an hour, right? Like you can't pull that one back when you're swinging. So that's okay. So again, one way to get to a very good process plus is to have a ton of power. But when that happens, we expect some streakiness. I think the guy who it's kind of starting to come back around for, but you know, it's still very cool to watch. We're seeing this with Tyler Fitzgerald in San Francisco, a guy who, if you look at his process plus chart, it's like average, below average, below average, and then just spikes up huge, right? Like about 2 or 3 weeks ago, it does exactly what you think it's going to do. It just makes this huge spike. And guess what? It's all power, right? All of a sudden, every time this guy hit the ball, he was sending it out of the park. And I'm not saying that means, you know, there's always those folks who say like, oh, when you show a skill, you own it, right? So like, sure, Tyler Fitzgerald has the ability to hit a bunch of those home runs, but like hitting the ball that often is going to be very difficult for him, right? Like Tyler Fitzgerald, he's not great at contact. It's going to be difficult for him to make contact as often as he has lately. He's, you know, and he's been rocking this high strikeout rate. Is that kind of what you're seeing? A player like Fitzgerald, he makes this huge spike. It's all power based. How do you feel about that?
If something's almost entirely power based, and especially if kind of that's what the results are saying. So like your Reese Hines was another one who really just popped up and it's just like, oh yeah, because he's hitting a homer every other plate appearance. The problem is when you're an all power profile like that, you're reliant not only on getting pitches to hit hard. I mean, like the difference between like a pitch you can hit a homer with and a pitch you're likely to hit a double with isn't that much. And pitchers are in control of that. That I think is Aaron Judge has mentioned that homers are thrown to you more than like you're making homers. And like, I believe that. I mean, I believe that Judge can also make a homer out of pretty much every pitch, but I really believe, and I've talked about it with kind of our mistake rate metric, that there are pitches in the zone that are just likelier to get hurt. And so I think when you're a power profile, pitchers aren't going to give you those pitches, that they're going to kind of Blake Snell, avoid the heart of the zone, nibble, and just let you flail away kind of at those edges. And the thing is, if you're making less contact, that's less opportunities to actually tap into that power. Like if you're whiffing and you're not putting balls in play, that's a really hard profile to like influence with a batted, with hard hit batted balls. Like you can't put a strikeout over the bleachers is kind of what I'm saying. And that's what we saw with Hines. You know, he was running a 40% strikeout rate while he was homering everything he actually hit. And one of those things is much more stable than the other. And sure enough, the strikeout rate remained above 30, while the homers per fly ball dropped down to very good, but still close to league average. And he's just tanked. And I'm concerned with a player profile who pops up like that, like Fitzgerald. I think he's not quite as abysmal as Hines was rating out to be. Hines was like a 50 contact plus, just like atrocious. Fitzgerald is more of like, yeah, it's not good, but it's still, even when you fold in his decisions and his power, he comes out to be still like a roughly league average process plus. So I believe in that. I think he's going to be a useful player. But if you're buying kind of that hot streak, that all power profile that he was showing, I'd be a little bit more skeptical of that.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And so we've talked a lot about this power profile, and I wanted to because it's the one that comes up the most. It's the one that grabs the most attention. Dudes are just hitting home runs left and right, and you kind of want to get a feel for why that's happening. And I think we've kind of talked that one out quite a bit. I think let's sort of go to the other end. I want to talk a little bit about guys who maybe are driving these, good process plus metrics, but they're doing it with like all contact. So the guy that's doing this a bit right now, since the All-Star break, I want to talk a little bit about Xander Bogaerts, right? So Xander Bogaerts, he's super contract driven, but there's not a ton of power. Another player who does this, even though he's hitting some home runs lately, Vinny Pasquantino, another guy who really drives with contact. So when you see a player who, again, we're talking about extremes, we're talking about guys who make maybe average or maybe slightly above average decisions or below average, and don't bring a ton of power to the table, but make a ton of contact. When you see that, Kyle, what do you think?
With that, I see that's a fairly high floor. That's a kind of a stable profile as far as, when he comes into the game, he's a good bet to get on base. It's not going to be a 50-50 bet, otherwise he'd be a Hall of Famer. But, one out of three to about two out of five times he's getting on base, that's an extremely useful hitter. And so that kind of floor is it's useful for a team as far as like lineup construction is concerned. Those metrics, I know I've been mentioning how fluid power can be, that it takes a lot more to stabilize. And that's because of things of like, you need to first off make contact. And then before that, you need to swing. And so it takes a lot of pitches for those rates to stabilize. And then we can see if power does. But for things like decision value and contact, those stabilize fairly quickly. So you have a good idea in a small amount of time. Okay, who is this guy? What skills is he working with? And where is he at? And so for a guy like Bogaerts, I think, he had that slump kind of in early May, mid-May, right before he got injured, but he seems to be coming out of that. Especially he got really hot at the end of July, really brought better decisions and better contact, which is a good like hand-in-hand you want to see. That's, to me, like when you put those together, that's your OBP skill is just going up and up. And so that's going to be great. He's never going to be he's probably not going to be a plus power guy. But like I said, that's not his game, and he doesn't need to do that. That he's proven that he can provide value for you by getting on base early and often, and he does it for his team too. And so I think that these kind of guys, I'm saying it's a more stable profile, but you also need to remember in the back of your head, all of these guys who are reliant on hitting the ball are still spinning that BABIP wheel. Let's see where we end up. That sometimes you're going to make great contact, just lace a line drive 100 miles an hour, and the shortstop just gets up in the air and grabs it, snatches it right out of the air. That's an out. And that sucks, but like, that's the point of the stat. It's a good process, poor result. And so with a guy with a contact first profile, Bogaerts, we're seeing it like Arias is doing well with it, but a player like a Keibert Ruiz or a Jung Ho Lee, those are guys who also make just bundles and bundles of contact, but they are losing the BABIP game. Jung Ho Lee's 273, Keibert Ruiz is 218. That those are just really atrocious and unlucky values. I think they start to level out, but that's kind of the risk that you take with these contact over everything profiles, is you're still reliant on the ball finding some gaps in the defense.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny, we just had someone on the Discord ask like, oh, why isn't Vinny Pasquantino, more stable for fantasy production? And the thing is, the contact has been super, super stable. But again, when you're reliant on putting balls in, you need balls that you can actually put in play, and then you're spinning the BABIP wheel. Also, you're also depending a lot on like team context, right? Like that double might not be worth anything but a small boost to your batting average. If no one, it's a two out double, no one's on base, and then the next guy gets out, that double wasn't really worth very much for fantasy. Even if he did it, he could have three doubles in the game and you get almost nothing for it besides ratios, because, a double only matters in category leagues when there's other people on base, right? Yeah. Or there's people to bring that runner home. So when you see a player like that, who's, you're like, oh wow, why does he seem so inconsistent? Well, because the results, like the runs, the RBI, those are going to be inconsistent because that's not in the batter's control. The batter can't make other people get on base. So That's a really important thing to look at. Other players in this profile, one that's just boggled my mind lately, Jeff McNeil. He's always been this way. He's very contact first. Like, he's hitting some home runs because pitchers are throw. Like, I love that quote from Aaron Judge. Like, people are throwing Jeff McNeil home runs. He's not going to keep getting them. Like, I hate to be negative about it, but he had like 1 year where he hit like 20 home runs. That was 2019. Cause that's what Jeff McNeil needed. He needs a rabbit ball to get to that kind of power, or he just needs to get groove stuff all the time. So, you know, Jeff McNeil, another guy, and I didn't realize he was quite like this until I took a look. Alec Burleson, who I really like over in St. Louis. It's a really contract driven profile. And both those guys also are extremely aggressive. Like, they swing a lot. They swing when other people don't swing. So they're putting a lot of balls in play, and you'll run, you know, it's weird because we're like, oh, when you're high power, no contact, you run really hot and cold. You actually run really hot and cold when you're just contact and you're not bringing a ton of power, because again, you're spinning the BABIP wheel, right? And sometimes you're hitting those straight up the middle, and they're getting through, right? Line drive up the middle, it's through. But line drive 6 feet to the left, it's not. Just because that's the BABIP wheel. That's the way that game works. So another guy who's like this as well, Andrés Giménez. He's another contact over everything sort of guy. These guys also, you'll find they are often very aggressive hitters in a lot of cases, who are trying to just bring the contact. And it's because that's how they got to the majors.
Yep.
Right.
They know they can hit that ball. That's the thing, is like, sure, it's a couple inches off the plate. Maybe it's a little bit high, but I can get there. I've gotten there in the past. I can do it again. That's the prime Javi Baez kind of thing, of like, he could just hit anything within 6 inches of the strike zone. So it's a little bit different for a guy like him. Another kind of alluding to your point before of contact only guys can kind of ring hollow, especially for fantasy, is a guy like Nico Hoerner. Always run a really high contact rate, but as we've seen, if he's not at the top of the lineup and stealing bases, that's an empty average, and he's not like Luis Arias god tier levels of that where he'll save a category for you. So he's just getting you like, yeah, a couple 300 weeks every now and then, but with very few runs, with like maybe a stolen base if you're lucky. And that's, I mean, honestly, that's kind of just burning a roster spot. That's a really hard profile to keep if they're not providing something somewhere else.
I think sometimes we forget to talk about lineup spot when we're talking about skills, and it's so important, right? Like, if Jeff McNeil's hitting first or second, that's a very, very different sort of fantasy value he'll bring than he is when he's hitting ninth, right? Or eighth, which, and these guys will tend to like sort of move to the top or the bottom of the lineup, depending on other players on their team, depending on like, sometimes they get platooned and then like go to the top or the bottom. But a guy like Alex Verdugo in New York, right? Like, he matters a lot when he's hitting like first or fourth, because he's putting a bunch of balls in play and he's hitting around some of the best players in the game. But when he's hitting like eighth or seventh, he's just not that interesting, because those guys already got driven around. And now, you know, the bases are empty and it's Alex Verdugo up there trying to hit another single. Right. Yeah, so if you're
hitting in front of Soto and Judge, that hit is also a run, almost guaranteed. So like, exactly. Yeah, that helps a lot.
Exactly. So that's pretty cool. And again, contact is one of those things too, that I like, just because players can fluctuate with contact ability, but it tends to be one of those very like, either you can do this or you can't. I do not expect to see Matt Wallner become a plus contact guy. He might get out of the basement, but he's unlikely to become a plus contact guy. Same for, you know, the guys with really low power. Like, they're just unlikely to turn into high power. They can improve those metrics, but we don't see them like really fluctuate. The one of these that does fluctuate a lot, right? The one that's probably, you might say, the most in the batter's control, because it's completely learned. That's decision value, right? So there are players who get to a good process plus score, mostly just from decision value. It's not quite as common, because like, you can make good decisions and that's great. But if you can't do anything with them, it doesn't always work out super well. But you know, we do see a guy who's kind of doing this right now, who is now hitting at the top of the order. And I love it. It's Jonathan India, right? Like, he's just driving this on. He's patient. And he waits for his pitches. He gets them. He doesn't do anything more with them than you'd expect. But it doesn't matter if he's consistently making the right call. So again, we don't see a ton of guys who are only decision value. Usually it comes with power. It comes with something else. But, you know, let's talk a little bit about that profile. So when you see a guy who's really just decision value and nothing else, maybe like, you know, on the good side, Jonathan India, maybe on the bad side, like Miguel Vargas, what do you see when you see a guy who's really driving this with decision value?
One of the things that I really look for, because decision value, and this is something I broke it out kind of earlier in the offseason, and especially if you look at kind of our like strike zone heat maps, you can see there are kind of two different decision values. There's in zone and there's out of zone decision values. And so out of zone is easy. You spit at balls that are going to be balls. Like if that pitch is a couple inches out of the zone, then just don't swing at it. You know, it's quote, not that hard, end quote. And so there's a lot more of like kind of a binary. And so you can drive a lot of value that way because the pros are so good. Getting balls is a very positive outcome because it's a guaranteed bettering of the count, versus if you swing, you can still miss. You can still put the ball in play for an out, that there are like potential negatives there. So not swinging at balls is generally a very good plus. The trick is, guys can get there, can get positive decision value that way by being very passive. So that's your guys like your, I mean, Edward Julien is the patron saint of this. Of he's swinging 12% less often than we would expect based on the pitches he saw, which is giving him a somewhat positive decision value. But the problem is it's elite when the pitches are out of the zone that he's not going to swing at a ball. Absolutely not. But I mean, it's a 50 plus, like a 50 decision plus, like literally like worse than half the value. Like it's atrocious. And the problem is that leads into, because of the way this process plus stat is formed, if you're not swinging at good pitches to hit, that then trickles into, well, your contact expectation, that trickles into your power expectation. So those, if you're swinging at bad pitches to hit, that is, now your contact needs to do more work. Now your power needs to do more work just to kind of claw you back to that average level. And so I'm always curious to see what guys, specific guys' breakdowns are. Edward Julien's obviously the prime example, but someone who's I have is very good in the zone and out of the zone is someone like George Springer, that he gives you that very high floor. And I think we're starting to see him come around a little bit and really capitalize on what that floor provides you. And that's, you know, it's in an OBP league. This is someone like I would have been targeting him of like, he didn't do super well, but like the floor is always going to be very high for him just because he's putting himself in position to succeed. And so I try to look at it of in the sense of like, well, are they making good decisions? Yes or no. And then what is the shape of that? How aggressive are they? So something like along the lines of I'll sort our decision value leaderboard and then see, okay, who are the guys who are swinging more often than we'd like? So that's always kind of a fascinating thing to me. And the first guy that pops up is like Marcus Semien, that he makes good decisions while swinging more often than we think. And so that's a guy I like to target that profile because, okay, he's giving himself a high floor, but then he's also capitalizing on it, that he's giving himself more opportunities to put that ball in play and to put that ball in play in a useful way. So I generally like to target those types, especially in an average league, because if you're in an average league, walks are sometimes even detrimental. Like Juan Soto might be less valuable than usual just because sometimes half of the times he steps up to the plate, that's not going to do anything for you. Like, yeah, he'll get on base. Maybe he'll get a run out of it. But like, otherwise it's just like, yeah, I got two at bats from Juan Soto tonight. And like, that's not going to be super helpful, even though he does run a good average. So I tend to frame like my needs or what I'm looking for in a player or in a, like a target skill set. And then I can kind of frame and filter and see like, okay, who meets this? Who's swinging a lot, but at good pitches, because they're likely to put those pitches into play and in useful ways. Or, you know, maybe if I am trying to like really boost that OBP floor in a points league, actually, this is also really helpful of, yeah, who are the guys that are just going to rack up those walks? Who are the, you know, your Juan Sotos, your Ed Juliens, that those are going to be the guys who will really help you out. Kevin Biggio, he's another guy who, like, historically has just, he's happy to take almost any pitch you'll give him, especially if it's, you know, even flirting with the edge of the strike zone. So that's generally how I feel about decision value, that it's kind of the floor. It's the tide that raises all boats. But one thing to keep in mind too, and I've alluded to it with power, is the impact that these stats have is different. So power has the largest impact. How hard you hit the ball is going to be the thing that adds or drops the most runs from your profile, just by dint of that's how runs are scored. Contact is kind of the same way. It's a lesser version, because making contact is generally a plus, not always. You know, sometimes if it's early in the count and you make contact on that pitch low and outside, well, that's going to be a ground ball. And, like, frankly, you might have been better off whiffing. That, yeah, getting to a two-strike count is better than have a ground ball out. So there are times where, yeah, contact is, it has its pluses, but you're still, like we talked about earlier, you're spinning that BABIP wheel. You don't always know what you're going to get. And the same thing with decision value, of this gives you the largest sample to kind of influence your value. But unless you're at that Juan Soto level decision making, it's not going to move the needle a ton, because we're talking like fractional changes, because you decide to swing. Well, you still need to make contact. You still need to put that contact into play. You still need to make sure that contact in play is hit hard, and then you still might get out. You know, you still might get, you know, the line drive to the left fielder, a warning track fly ball that's snagged by the center fielder, that kind of thing. So there's a lot more uncertainty in the things that happen after decision value. So that limits kind of how much impact it can have on that pitch to pitch level.
Yeah, no, it's a great point, right? Like the issue I have with, like, Miguel Vargas, like, and yeah, sure, he's not a new team or whatever, but he's super, super passive. And the way you can beat him is by throwing strikes, right? Like this is happening to Edouard Julien as well, right? Like, I really like some of the skills there, but because he's so bad at contact, you just, like, yeah, he's going to spit on anything outside the zone. So just give him stuff in the zone, right? Like, let him try to beat like that, because he's still going to miss. He's going to make the right decision, but he's going to miss all the time. So, you know, I really liked what you said. It's really hard to find players who are overall aggressive, but still have good decision-making, right? So you called out one, George Springer. One of the reasons I'm so interested in what Victor Robles is doing right now, I don't think he's going to keep hitting that many home runs, right? Like, the three he has are probably more than I would have expected in 48 games, but he's not only being, you know, a bit aggressive, but he's making the right decisions both inside and outside of the zone. So he's got above average decision-making inside and outside of the zone, and he's good at making contact, right? He's above average at making contact. So when you're good at all of those things, and you're hitting leadoff, it's a really, really exciting place to be. Oh, and you're also super fast. Like, that's a really nice combination. And it's, again, one of the keys is that he's leading off, right? Because now all that stuff to get the most out of decision value and to get the most out of contact, you kind of want to be doing it more often. You need more plate appearances, right? Like, to some level, power, it's, you know, it doesn't matter who else is on base, because a home run is valuable kind of no matter when you hit it, right? Mm-hmm. It can become more valuable, but, you know, it doesn't really matter. But with guys who are going to hit singles and doubles, like a Victor Robles, right? They're so much more valuable at the top of the lineup, or at least closer to the middle of it than they are at the back end. And yeah, it's not easy to find guys who can do that. So it's cool when you see it. Again, players who are aggressive and bring, you know, even if they're good at one of the two, inside or outside of the zone, and just average in the other, even, that's hard to do when you're aggressive. We don't see very much of it. So that's why I'm not just like listing names like, oh yeah, this guy, that guy. We don't see it a lot. It's hard to be sort of good at both. So when a player like Victor Robles is coming in and being, you know, good at inside and outside of the zone decision-making and is being a little aggressive at the plate, it's really worth taking notice. So if you're wondering if Victor Robles is for real, to some extent, like, yeah, this ain't luck, right? Like, he's he's doing the right things. He's doing the things that would make him valuable. And just to call out another guy who I like more than I think the industry does, but who I think is going to be pretty streaky, and we've already seen him do that, Ezekiel Tovar, right? So he's probably the most aggressive swinger in the league. He wants to swing at everything, and he's quite below average at making contact. Now, part of this works, I think, because he plays in Colorado. So Tovar plays in Colorado. So like, it's harder to beat him with breaking balls because they don't do what they're supposed to do up there. So he gets those games at home. He's harder to beat that way. But also, and again, in Coors, putting the ball in play is great. And if you just swing all the time, you know, he swings 17, well, since June 1st. I'm just looking from June 1st now. He swings 17.6, like his swing aggression is 17.6, which means like he's swinging way more often than we would expect a player to based on the pitches he sees. And he doesn't have to make a ton of contact to pile up like batting average and runs scored because he's swinging at everything, right? He's turning everything into a batted ball. So it's really interesting to sort of see that. And, you know, when you look at the split, right, his overall decision value is a 75. So 75 plus, so like 25% worse than average. But his zone decision value, 131, 31% better than average. Why? Because he swings at everything in or out of the zone. So when you swing at everything in the zone, you get a good score. And then when you swing at everything out of the zone, you get a bad out of the zone score. So really interesting. You know, Kyle, I really appreciate kind of just talking about different ways players are good. You know, I hate to put you on the spot, but Kyle, is there a player or two that sort of comes to mind that, you know, maybe is getting these results in a way that is interesting, good or bad, right? Like something you're like, oh, wow, I don't know how this could continue, but it's happening. Or, you know, a player who's like, hey, this is, you know, you've already talked about some, but like, what are the ways you like to see a player to succeed? What are the ways you like to see a player succeed that make you feel like, yeah, this can keep happening?
Yeah, I mean, one of the ones, and he'll always kind of have a special place in my heart because I really love very extreme kind of min-maxi profiles, is Daniel Vogelbach. He rates super highly in the small sample that he had this year. He doesn't swing at all, so kind of getting into what we were talking about earlier. So he actually swings so little that he runs a slightly minus decision value, which is very hard to do. Like, as someone who's in this data a lot, if you don't swing a lot, that's generally good because you're generally not swinging at balls too. But he's just swinging at nothing. But he adds a ton of contact and a ton of power. And so like, I was really hoping that this is kind of like that all bat kind of profile. And I'd really be interested if I see another team pick him up. I know he's kind of floating around like free agency minor situation. He's not starting for a major league team, but like, that's someone that I would really love to see thrive. And I see the avenue for which they thrive. Another profile, I guess I'm kind of a sucker for as much as I made these stats to try and, I was most interested in decision value when I got into this like pitch level quantification thing, because everyone would talk about it. And there was never anything that was like, well, Juan Soto's a god at this, but his Z minus O swing is like good, but not that elite level. And so that's why I made like decision value. And then we've trickled out from there. But like, I've actually developed a lot more respect for guys who run that very good contact, very good power profile. So Yordan Alvarez has kind of turned into that this year, where he might be one of my favorite kind of plate coverage monster kind of situations. That we were talking about it in the pitcherless Discord, but like the scariest hitter to face, just because what are you going to throw him? Because he can make contact everywhere and he can hit it hard everywhere. And someone that's really exciting to see, you know, he's a young player. He's very exciting. Is Bobby Witt Jr. That he's starting to kind of trend into that. Well, he can hit almost everything you throw at him, and there's a lot of juice in that bat when he makes contact. And then you fold on to how electric he is on the base paths. And like, that's a super fun profile to me that I can't wait to kind of see how that develops. Something I know we were talking about couching decisions with how aggressive the player is someone that worries me very much. I know you talked about Ezekiel Tovar and how aggressive he is, but how it works because he's swinging at pitches he should, at hittable pitches in the zone. And so that provides him some value. And especially in a place like Coors with that huge outfield where there's a lot of room for those hits to drop. But someone that I've been looking at that is very worrying is Pete Crow Armstrong, that he's swinging 12% more often than we would expect. And that's running a minus decision value in the zone. So he's swinging it, even at the zone pitches, he's swinging it like more often than not, quote unquote, the wrong ones. So the ones that are maybe closer to the corners and maybe letting a pitch down the middle go by, that's a very concerning profile, is if you're swinging a lot, but you're not swinging at those right pitches to hit, that's a very, very scary place to be in. And one of the things I'll kind of wrap up, it's an easy one. It's Shohei Ohtani. He's incredible. Like, just all everything, does everything. He's actually fairly average at decision values, fairly average at contact. He's just like the epitome of what you want in this power happy slugger. That the dude is just like, yeah, I'll swing at that, and it's going to go into the bleachers. And like, my favorite, it's become a genre because of how often it happens, is kind of his like step into them inside, like golf swing homers, where it's like 3 inches off the inside of the bottom corner of the plate, and he somehow like is able to get his barrel to it and pull it, and it's into the parkway. It's not even into the bleachers, that it's 450 feet, and it blows my mind. And I just love that he's kind of leaned into that, that he's kind of developed, like he's accepted that he's going to get more K's. His hunting for contact has gone down. His decision value has gone down a little bit, but it's just because he knows, and as we talked about, you can't train that. I mean, you can, the guys at Driveline Tread, like I know they do train that, but like that Ohtani level, like that's innate. That is just something that God touched him with, the ability to just mash. And so like, I love seeing kind of those profiles where it is that one skill, the I know I've talked a little bit about Soto, who's had a renaissance year. He's been hitting the ball way harder, which is awesome to see. And so now he's crushing it. He's an MVP consideration. But like, prior to this season, he was like almost a decision value only guy. And I love, like, I rooted for that because I feel like that's a very hard thing for people who maybe have a more rudimentary analysis or understanding of what baseball stats are, like how players provide value, that I'm like, Juan Soto is adding runs left and right, and it just doesn't look great because his average is this and he's not getting a ton of RBIs. And it's just like, I love those profiles. Luis Urias, same thing, the hit tool over everything. It's fun, and I really like with these stats that you can get those guys and you can see, you can mix and match and plug and play and see how guys are good. And that was one of the things that I really set out to do. That's one of kind of my driving ideas, one of my driving forces behind the analysis I do, is I believe like all of these guys are major league players. Like, they got here for a reason. You don't just luck into the big leagues. That this is a process. This has taken tens, dozens of years of their life. For some of these guys, it's taken the better part of a decade just in minor league affiliated ball to get here. They're all going to be good at something. And it's really cool to me to see like, oh, what is he good at? And like, I can put that in the context of, well, that doesn't, like, he's good at this, but it doesn't really save the rest of his profile. So that's why, you know, he's their number nine hitter. That's why he's the platoon bat. But I just really like to see, like, I like to see what guys are good and where, and give them credit for the things they're good at. And so those guys who are like all in on one of these metrics are, they also have a special place in my heart.
Yeah. It's like a Baldur's Gate character for a fantasy player, right? Like, it's exactly. Like, oh yeah, I'm just going to crank the strength up all the way. They're like, well, how about wisdom? I was like, I don't, you know, like none, right? Like, what about intelligence? They don't need to read. They throw spears, right? Like, I don't need them to do anything else, but throw this pike over and over again. So I agree. I love seeing those profiles as well. One, because they help me, like, I can quickly understand what type of player this is, right? When every year someone asks me like, oh, why don't you rank Nolan Gorman? I'm like, I do sometimes, but I know exactly what Nolan Gorman is, right? Because he's all power, no contact, none, right? He's just terrible at making contact. He runs extremely hot and cold. That's the type of player he's always probably going to be, unless he makes a very dramatic change to how he approaches the game. Right? Because that's just what he is. And when a player starts looking like that early, it again, these things can change, but even like a guy like Kyle Sowers, right? So he's, you know, since he's been up, he's not graded very well in contact at all, but he's got a ton of power there and he makes good decisions. So, you know, for right now, at least a lot of what I'm kind of seeing is like, okay, this is a player who right now is going to be really streaky until he figures some things out. We're just going to see a lot of up and down because that's the type of player he's looking like. Right. But also I do want to call out something I really liked when you brought up Yordan Alvarez. Guys that are good at contact and power, I don't care about their decision-making. When you're good at both, like, it sounds like overly simplistic, but when you're good at power, like you bring a ton of power and you can make contact, pitchers, like they can't, you can't pitch around it, right? Like you just, eventually you have to throw them something to hit. So some players like that who, you know, like I really hope that the Twins realize they need Jose Miranda in the lineup more. He's a guy who brings both of those tools and like, yeah, it's like kind of average, below average decision-making because he's kind of aggressive, but like who cares? Because you put him in the lineup, he's going to produce, he's going to do it fairly consistently. A guy who has really done that this year, even though his decision-making is like well below average. I still like Anthony Santander, right? Like he's a guy who is just hitting. I mean, obviously the home runs tell you he's hitting the ball hard, but he's actually his contact plus is higher than his power plus with Anthony Santander. And it's because you know, he's just really good with the bat, right? Like he has run streaky in the past because he just doesn't walk, right? Like that decision value you can get picked on sometimes by pitchers because they know you'll swing at things you probably shouldn't. And they can beat you up a little bit, but you know, he's gotten much better at making contact and he's hitting the ball real hard. There's just not a way to just stop him. Right. And it's, again, it's very fun to see. It's the type of player that's very easy for me to like buy in on. But also the last one I want to talk about is it's very, very hard to be good at everything. You don't need players to be good at everything, but there is someone this season who is at least a 110 in all of this stuff, at least since June 1st. And I know that you've just mentioned him. I forget exactly what it was. It might've been on Twitter, but do you want to gush about Ketel Marte just for a second before we end this?
Dude, we are not talking about Ketel Marte. And like, I love that I put that tweet out because he's been trending up all season. So he's one of those guys who is like, he's always been pretty much plus, like average to plus level at all three of these metrics. So decisions, contact, power. But as the season's gone on, he's just been like, well, I'm going to get better at all of them simultaneously. And so, I mean, we're just starting to see like this fully weaponized Ketel Marte. And I love that, like, right after I tweeted it out, I think he hit a homer that night in the game, really making me look good there. I think he hit another homer the next night. But the dude is legit. It's extremely hard, like you said, to get guys who are this good at everything. And like, that's the thing, is like your threshold is 110. That's not very good in any category, but it's still like, I mean, a sample, like it's one guy is able to get all three. And like, if you were to ask me who I would bet on that can kind of do that consistently, it's like Freddie Freeman.
That's the other guy who kind of can do this.
The floor is the roof for Freddie Freeman, but like, he's never going to hit maybe as many homers as you want. Because you just think like, oh, well, if he can do this, like if he can make this much contact and he makes this good of decisions, oh, well, he can add power. And it's like, this is where I think you kind of can run into the wall of like, honestly, like biomechanics at this point of you kind of need to choose for a lot of guys. You need to choose between, am I swinging for contact? You talked about Arias just sits and waits and waits and waits and then just flips the bat at it and hits that blooper right over the second baseman. Now he's on first. And like, that's his strategy. That's what he's trying to do. That is by design versus someone, I thought of him earlier when we were talking about the all power profile, but Giancarlo Stanton, with the bat speed data we have, that dude, he only has one speed and that speed is 120 miles an hour. Like he it's so funny to see his distribution. He never takes anything off. He is just going pedal down every swing, and if he hits that ball, it's going into the stratosphere, but he's not always going to hit that ball. And so that's kind of why he's settled in at like roughly an above average player. And so these are the kind of things that it's extremely hard to develop a swing that allows you to both tap into bat speed and allow you the variable ability to like hit the ball, to actually make contact. Because even though these guys are major league hitters, they're facing major league pitchers with elite stuff, and they're going to get fooled. And if you can get fooled and still get that barrel to the ball, that's a very impressive skill. And so I think it's truly exciting when you see these guys like Ketel Marte that really are putting it all together. These are the guys, like, I mean, you talked about it, that like no one, like there are very few above average players. And the thing is, you're going to have to spend a first round pick in fantasy to get them. Like that's the rub of like, yeah, everyone knows these guys can do it all, but it's exciting to see these guys like Ketel Marte, who always had may have had the tools or may have had like a lesser version of this, but kind of start to level up and start to put it all together.
Yeah. Again, it's just, it's really fun. If you're part of if you're one of our PL pros, I encourage you to look around at this stuff. And if you're not, like, reach out and ask about a player, right? Tell us what you're seeing. You can ask myself or Kyle, he's on Twitter at Blandalytics. You can ask us, you know, like, hey, this player's kind of doing something exciting. Should I care? Is there something here? Right? Because again, a lot of times we can sort of get a pretty, you know, these stats do an awesome job of kind of telling us what to expect, at least for now, right? Like, I'm getting asked about James Wood right now, right? Like, people are like, well, he's a huge prospect. Like, what's going to happen? It's like, well, he's not making very good decisions, and contact is going to be a bit of a struggle for him, probably always, because it always kind of has been, but the power's very real, right? So with James Wood, he can improve that decision-making, right? He just needs to see more major league pitching. He just needs like more time to figure out like, oh, wow, these guys can do stuff minor leaguers can't. So I have a lot, like, I think there's a lot of upside with James Wood, but because that contact ability is limited, it's going to be streaky. And that streakiness is going to be really pronounced as he's sort of figuring out his way in decision value. And because we have these great stats, we can sort of like see like, hey, not only can I see this player is, you know, good at this and bad at that, but now that we have this process plus, you can really kind of see like what, you know, what are the sum of the parts? You know, what does this all lead into, right? Like, Vlad Guerrero Jr. is not making like exceptional decisions of late, right? Like, they're fine, they're average, but man, he's getting his bat on the ball and he's hitting it hard. He's that contact plus power guy. The decisions you can throw out the window, and when you're doing both those well, boom, there it is. It's the high process. It shows, you know, I was so worried about Vlad Guerrero Jr. not ever getting back to being like a power hitter and turning into this more of like slappy kind of guy, but he's doing that Yordan Alvarez profile now. Like, hey, don't worry, you know, don't worry about walks. Don't worry about any of that. Right? Like, if you think you can hit it hard, do it, swing. And it's just so fun to see. And I can use, you know, it's like, hey, is this stuff that Vlad Guerrero doing, is like, is this for real? Is he back? And it's like, man, this, if he continues doing what he's doing, then like, yes, I think he can be. Yeah. Because when you're, again, a 120 contact plus, a 122 power plus since June 1st turns into a 135 process plus, because those two things matter a ton.
Yeah. I tweeted about him yesterday. I basically saying that his process plus is at the same level as it was when he was with 2021, when he was kind of in that MVP consideration. And it's a different shape now because he was making plus decisions then, and now it's much more reliant on contact and power. But then sure enough, this morning, I don't know if you saw I tweeted out he homered. And he homered on a curveball that's like at the bottom, like just kisses the bottom of the strike zone, which is like kind not a great decision. Like, you kind of want to see like, well, maybe the ump will call it a ball. Or if you're making contact, you might just top it and that's a ground ball. But sure enough, he's able to get it, and not just get it, but he just hammers it over the bleachers, and it validates everything with his profile into this one beautiful moment of, it was a slightly minus decision, but it was plus contact to get to it, and then it was definitely plus power to put it into the stands. And it's just like, things like this can help you validate like, oh yeah, this is the profile, this is the guy, like this is more of what the expectation should be.
Yeah, and you see the path, right? Like, one of the big things about these stats is it just tells you, all right, this guy, real results have been good for 2 weeks. What's the path? How does that look to keep doing it, right? And we talked about some of these, you know, like Matt Wallner. It's hard to do. When you're not good at making contact, it's really hard to stay consistent. because you just miss a lot, right? And like, if pitchers stop giving you stuff to hit, it's going to get even harder, versus maybe a guy like Lawrence Butler, who right now is sort of making decent contact and making okay decisions and adding a bunch of power with it. It makes Lawrence Butler a little bit more exciting than, say, Tyler Fitzgerald, who's not quite, so balanced in everything he's doing. And, the stat line won't help you compare Lawrence Butler and Tyler Fitzgerald very well, but these stats can really help you do that by understanding, again, how they're doing it. Like, how are you getting to this place? How are you showing us the good stuff, right? Like, even O'Neill Cruz, I love O'Neill Cruz. And now that the contact is even average, you get to see a lot more of the good stuff, because make average contact with plus, plus, plus power, and boom, like, you can see results even if the decision-making is not awesome. But again, Kyle, thanks so much for being here. We talked a lot about, stats and profiles. And I think it's one of the things in fantasy baseball we don't do enough is, like, every player's unique, right? They've all got their own backstories and everything. But when you start identifying tropes, when we start identifying, like, oh, this is one of these kinds of guys, I think you can really, it'll really help you when you're doing that waiver wire stuff throughout the season.
Yeah.
So Kyle, I'm sure you bring it right to your waiver wire every time. Like, you see a guy and you're like, oh, I know what this is.
This is it's a blessing and a curse. Like, I love putting this stuff out there. It's super fun to see people take it and run with it. But at the same time, like, especially on these like apps and the rolling charts and all that, like, this is how I think. Like, you like have more or less like access to my brain, or at least the things that I'm looking at when I'm trying to do analysis. So it's been pretty tough as like my home leagues, and especially in like TGFBI and our pitcherless staff leagues, that like people are aware of this. And so it's a lot harder for me personally to get an edge, but that's a willing trade-off to just see kind of like the enthusiasm that this has brought and the positive response to it. And then kind of one thing I just wanted to touch on before, we maybe wrap up here is, so we're going to have an article out soon. Nate Schwartz is putting it together and he's doing a killer job. He's been asking me a ton of questions, bouncing back and forth. I'm actually going to edit it later tonight and take a look and see, how I feel about what he's explained, but he seems to have a very good understanding of it. So I'm excited to see that article. But a little tease, a little gift for anyone that's kind of been with us for this is, part of this was doing year-to-year correlations and seeing how this go, like how predictive, how useful, how much does this describe kind of who the player is, what their talent is, how consistent is this year to year. And it's more, it predicts itself better than performance does, better than WRC plus does, even over the same sample size. But the thing that I was most excited about is process plus outperforms WRC plus at predicting WRC plus. So actually, and that was not the intent of this. This was just a way to get all of our stats to play well together. But the more I'm digging into this, it's a very powerful tool because, to bring it back to how we started the episode, we're using everything a pitcher does, or a hitter does. Every pitch they faced, every swing they took, every ball they hit. And we're using that and we're valuing it and we're gleaning insights from it. And so the sample size of who this hitter is a lot larger than for something like WRC plus and something like this that doesn't take into account batted ball luck, park, things like that, that it's a lot truer to, I believe it's a lot truer to kind of who these hitters are. And therefore, yeah, it makes sense that, well, who they are this year is going to be consistent to who they are next year. And the results will follow that. So that's been a really exciting thing. Can't wait to read it. And then sometime in this off season, I'm going to do like an omnibus, just like covering what all of these stats that we've talked about today are, what they're useful for, what they're predictive of, how they interact. So I know we've talked about guys who have like good decisions and good contact, and that's usually your high OBP guys, or how we don't really care if a guy makes bad decisions if it's a ton of contact and a ton of power. So I'm going to be delving into that on like a much deeper, broader level later this offseason. But yeah, super exciting.
Yeah, now all we'll have to do then is come up with names for these tropes like Nick's got. right? Like once, you know, once we get those, I think we'll finally be on the same page with all these random nicknames. But again, Kyle, thanks so much. Really excited for that article as well. So check it out from Nate Schwartz. That's crazy to me that it's better at predicting our WRC plus than WRC plus.
I like did not expect it at all. I didn't even like think that it would like, because yeah, this has no idea what anything is, but it's shown to be that like, if you're looking at things the hitter can control, that has a lot more signal than noise, than even a stat that is adjusting for league, is adjusting for park, that it's really cool to see that.
Yeah. And, you know, again, if you ever come back to this conversation, you also get to understand guys that, you know, might have a great process plus, but maybe it's not going to be as sticky because you can see the other things the player's bringing around, right? Or you can see like, you know, every time we go into we're coming out of the off season, people are like, how is this guy better than last year? And you can look like, well, if all he's missing is power, then I probably shouldn't expect a whole lot different versus, well, if he just makes better decisions, well, you know what? You can do that. A player can make better decisions. It's one of the more variable things you see in small samples. Just because again, you can get fooled by a certain type of pitch. You're not picking up spin very well. So all of a sudden you're swinging it, breaking balls. It's a lot of fun. Kyle, thanks again for being on and just talking through some of these stats and helping folks, you know, kind of get a peek into your mind on what does it mean to be successful, right? They don't all have to be Juan Soto. Hopefully, if you get nothing else from this conversation, that there's a lot of ways to be relevant and they all have their own ups and downs, but they're all different ways to get there. And you can sort of see how that all adds up just by looking at this great new stat, Process Plus.